Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I don't know. I'm looking to see if the Facebook Live is up. I don't see it yet, so I'm checking on that right now. But so we might restart. I'm not sure yet. He might have us, Sam at the studio might have us restart. But anyway, we'll go ahead and proceed. Welcome, everybody. I'm really honored to have Mark Bonilla back on the show. Mark, it's just really awesome to have you back here.
Oh, it's great to be back. I'm looking forward to it, man.
And I told him the last time, because he was talking about this album now that just finally came out, Celluloid Debris. And I'm going to show you a picture of it here, or the album itself. And I said, you got to come back when this thing's done. So he had finally called me, said, I got it done. We're ready to go. So I got a chance to pull some clips from it tonight or this last week. And I just want to say, this is a great album. And there's all sorts of different styles, techniques, tone, guitars, all sorts of different things. So welcome. It's good to have you on the show, Lori. It's great to have you here. Hello. And thank you for putting this together. You're on two, I think.
Am I on?
You're three.
There
you go.
I
know where you are.
Hi. I think Facebook Live is live now. So
it is? Okay. So as I talk to Mark and you see me playing with the phone, I'm just sharing the link. So excuse my phone etiquette. But anyway, again, welcome. And what I want to do is talk a little bit from conception to mastering about this album, because there's some interesting things that you're doing on the album, and I think people need to hear what the meaning behind the concept behind it, because it's more than just a guitar album. It's more like a sonic landscape. A lot of the key to me, or the important part of the album, is the arrangements. Or actually, to be honest with you, it's more of an orchestration than it is just a straight arrangement. So give me a little bit of background about how this album came to be from the beginning.
Well, this has been 25 years since the last album, since mm-hmm. American Matador. And at the time, I didn't really want to do a third guitar album. I was too interested in getting into soundtracks and that stuff. And I had the opportunity to work with James Newton Howard, so I learned a lot from him just watching his mastery of mm-hmm. orchestration and keeping my mouth shut, my ears open, you know. And then I also worked with a lot of other great composers as well, John Debney and Joel mm-hmm. McNeely and Marty Davich, all these guys. And so I, you know, just by proximity effect, I started to, you know, gain a little bit more knowledge into how to do soundtrack stuff. So mm-hmm. then I ended up, for the next several years, a couple of decades, just doing soundtrack stuff. It was great because it forced me into a lot of different areas normally, you know, mm-hmm. Styles. So it would be, some stuff would be orchestral, some stuff would be a brass band, some stuff would be, you know, Indian music. It all depended on what bill I had to foot. So because of that, I got into a lot of different moods and got to play with a lot of different players. And so when it came time to finally do another instrumental album, I kind of wanted to reflect all of those places I had been for the past 25 years. So in putting this stuff together, I had maybe two or three ideas that I had begun back in the Matador days,
mm-hmm.
That I just kind of left on the shelf. I knew I liked the melodies of the stuff, but I didn't really pursue them because I wasn't wholeheartedly into it at that point. I
mm-hmm.
wanted to go other areas. But now, it was great because I went back, revisited them, I pulled them out and dusted them off and actually gave them a new coat of paint and then developed them from that point on into, you know, my modern sensibilities, whatever those happened to be at the time. So in doing this album, I get bored with my own solos if it goes on too long. It's kind of like a story that you know, like, you know, if you saw a particular film, it's a 2.5-hour film, could have been cut to an hour and a half and it would have been much better film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel like about a lot of solos. I think they could be cut to an hour and a half and make a better solo. You get to the point. It's all about storytelling.
Right.
And this is something that I've always kind of harped on is all art is storytelling. And music is especially using your notes, your words, you know, you're using chords as your paragraphs, all of these things. But you still have to tell a story, and you have to pace it. You have to have an editor, you know. Hopefully it's you, but mm-hmm. if not, it could be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So in getting the idea across, a lot of times it's not soloing. That tends to be a basis for your ego a lot of the times. It tends to take over. Whereas I always believe that as a musician, you're a servant of the music, and you need to give yourself up to whatever the music requires in order for the story to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that means don't stay on too long, you know, or whatever it happens to be. You need to still develop it with the sensibility of you're telling a story and you're not trying to be verbose and you're not trying to go on too long. So with this album, it's mainly, I mean, there's guitars all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of guitars, and they may only be in for a few seconds, but they're on their own track. And I treated it a lot like if you had an orchestra, you had like 105 or 106 piece orchestra, you know, you have the oboes that are laying out for the first few measures. Then they come in for a minute and they have a texture with maybe the clarinets. They come back out. You have different textures all the way through the orchestra. So what I've done on the album here is vary my tones to the degree that it's basically like a guitar orchestra, even though it's not, you don't perceive it that way orchestrally. I've tried to make it that way so that the colors, there's constant colors. Sometimes it goes black and white, whatever, to try and put across the mood or the message, you know, from tune to tune. And again, what this is it's basically the my last 25 years as a person on the planet. You know, what I've learned, what I've come across, things that have happened to me personally, in personal life, professional life, and also with the callbacks from my early childhood with the segs that are in between. Those are collages of things that we can talk about. But those all have meaning. There's nothing on here that's just like, yeah, I'm just going to throw this in. There's all a meaning behind
all. No filler.
Yeah, there's none. And so that's kind of was the concept. That was why the album is called Celluloid Debris. It was debris from my brain. Just bits and pieces of my life, you know, as a soundtrack, and celluloid is like film. You know?
It's interesting because the for doing an instrumental album, there's only one song here where there's vocals mm-hmm. on the album. And what you're saying, you know, it's not about soloing and stuff. It seems like it's difficult. Well, it didn't seem difficult in terms of what you executed, but to keep that interest and freshness because the songs are, on the whole, like 5 minutes or so. There's a couple, I think, a little longer. But the thing is that, like you said, each verse or each chorus or whatever, it's different each time you're hearing. Now, I'm playing clips tonight. When I show you some of the clips, the songs are much more developed. So I'm just pulling snapshots. But what he's talking about is there's a lot more development. The way the opening, the first verse into the second verse, the colors change and what you hear arrangement wise.
That's what we were talking about before the show started, actually, about developing composition versus just playing
well,
a song.
You're actually it's like a song, like a script. You're introducing characters.
Yeah.
And you have a character throughout a story, right, that comes in, you know, then it goes out, then another character comes in. Then their relationship later on develops into something, and at some point they all tie together at the end. So what you're doing here is basically telling a story with a script, and the characters are your motifs. You know?
Right.
So that's kind of where this
Now, was
slides.
was this, because there's so many little things, and now the Facebook Live, just so you know.
Back to Peter and the Wolf, right?
the Facebook Live is mono. It's just the way Facebook Live is. But if you can listen to the audio clip that'll be on LA Talk Radio, you'll hear this in stereo, because there's a lot of stuff going on between your two ears. There's a lot of these little guitar things happening, and we'll point out some of them as we play some of the clips. So take a listen for that, because that's a lot of the secret. Now, what I wanted to ask you, though, was this a real bugger to mix?
Oh, yes. The only way that this album ever saw the light of day was because of Mr. Ryan Green.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yes.
We love Ryan Green.
Absolute prince and fearless. Any other mixing engineer would have been cowering naked in a corner in a fetal position, looking at the tracks. You want me to do what? Mix this? You know. So he was amazing, and he gave up so much of his time and energy. And this is a guy that's not just sitting around waiting for the phone to ring.
Exactly.
He's constantly busy, and he overworks himself, but never loses the passion. And so we did a lot of the drum tracks. A majority of the drum tracks we did at his place. And there's nobody that does drum tracks better than him.
And
he's
miking,
amazing miking techniques. And then, again, mixing this was a Herculean feat, you know, as far as getting all of these parts to work the way I had them in my head. You know, it's one thing to have them in your head. It's another thing, and it's really what art is all about, getting them from your head into a three-dimensional area where you can actually pass that on to someone else. That's the whole art of anything like that.
Well, you were telling me before the show that you maxed out all the channels.
Yeah. I actually hold the record. I have to contact Guinness. I actually maxed out Ryan's 165 tracks of Pro Tools, and we still had to submix a part of it. So he goes, you know that you've done the impossible. You've actually maxed out my Pro Tools system, you know. And like, yeah, we had to do a submix of the string quartet at the end of Long Awakened, because there were so many parts, but they're not all playing at the same time. But we needed all to have their own sonic area.
So you basically gave each guy his own track. You didn't like put several instruments on one track.
No. Yeah. We didn't. No, everything had its
That's
own.
Old school, by the way.
Well, it wasn't that we didn't do some of that. We did, but. In a logical fashion, but most of it was because it needed its own sonic identification so that the stuff doesn't sound cluttered. It sounds very clear and transparent, yet rich, you know. And so, again, I could not have done this without Ryan. He was just a saint.
Well, let me play. I'm going to play Alpha Male, the first track on here. And this is a good indicator of a lot of guitar parts. You're going to hear a lot of different things going on here and kind of give you a feel of the complexity of the mix. I mean, there's just all of these songs, there's a lot of stuff happening here. So here's Alpha Male. Take a listen.
We'll be right back.
Now, in that about 2 minutes, that's about a 2 minute clip, and that's just a little snapshot of the whole overall song. There's about 20 guitars that just flew by there.
And that acoustic spot was so beautiful. Whoa.
Try to give equal time to electricity and wood.
Now, what were you using on that?
Got an hour?
There's the show, yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, I would have to think. Well, obviously my Martin is on the acoustic part. I also had a Giffen 12-string. I had a double neck made. And that was on the other arpeggiation part. I have a 6-string banjo in there at one point. Main guitar for that is my Marvel guitar over here, the Yamaha Pacifica. Also, I believe there was Strat in there at one of the sections. So it all just depended on what, you know, when I would lay something down, he goes, what does it need now? Where in the sonic spectrum is there somewhere that you know, a part that is meaningful for the song? I didn't just put parts in just to have them in there. There had to be a meaning for it. So I would write them, but it was like, okay, what's the best guitar to get this done? In other words, what's the character that I'm trying to develop at this point and push the story forward? So, you know, again, you have to remember that when I do this stuff, like any writer or any creator, this stuff doesn't come from you, it comes through you. So you're not conscious of a lot of the decisions that you make. You basically go, okay, you're just grabbing stuff because almost like someone's willing you to grab a particular instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I don't have a proper recall of all the things that I did because it's happening too fast.
Right.
Because a lot of times I'm afraid I'm going to lose the idea, I'm going to lose the concept if I don't act on it. You know, because this stuff comes through you. It's like rain.
Sure.
You know? And if you
it's
don't,
like dreams.
Yeah. And if you don't grab onto it, someone else will get the ring.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool because
it'll just disappear.
You're doing you'll do the main melody and then you answer it, but you'll answer it like three guys. All around and and then they're gone.
Well, it's like, you know, we like the Beach Boys doing their, you know, whatever, doo-wop, any of that stuff. It was all having conversations. You know, and any given conversation you have, if you have six people in the room, sometimes all six are talking at the same time. Sometimes one person and two people respond.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a different combination of who's talking in order to have a conversation. So so it all depends. You know, what's needed for a comment? Am I asking a question? Is it getting an answer? Are we doing a soliloquy? What is it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's just kind of you navigate by feel. You don't do this in your brain.
When you recorded this album, did you mic stuff or did you do a lot of it in the box?
I did both. A lot of this album, believe it or not, is on my little Line 6 pod.
Really?
The little kidney pod. You know, the first guy.
The one that you brought last time.
Yes. I did a lot of tones with that, you know, because I've really been able to get that thing to sound good. I'm putting it through Neve's, you know, Neve preamps. But then I used my red plate on a lot of stuff, and I unfortunately got my red plate right at the end of the album, so I ended up taking stuff off to put. I re-recorded stuff because the thing sounded so good. I wanted to get it on the album, you know. So I did a lot there. Also, my Divided by 13, I used some of that. My Fender Twin, you know, it was all basically like, what does this need? And a lot of times it's the guitar, sometimes the combination of the guitar and the amp. And I didn't care what it was, if it sounded right.
Right.
It didn't matter what it was.
Well, you mentioned with Ryan that you recorded the drums at his place,
yes.
Which was a room.
Yeah.
So I presume you took this to a room.
Yeah.
Or the...
Well,
or
I have a room at my house. I did all the guitars at my place.
So you can pull the mics back
and
get a
good
sound.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, he obviously helped with the tones and separation of getting things to work in those areas. Some of them needed a little bit more work than others. Some of them were effortless, you know. So, you know, but again, he did a masterful job.
That one sounded like a racetrack to me.
Yeah.
It's a good way to open
it up.
It's a really rocker and it moves.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to play something that's a little different that kind of shows more of the colors in the in what he's doing in the... This one's called Westwood. Now, do you want to say anything to set this one up?
Well, this was one of the older ones that I had actually started back after Matador, but never finished it. But this was a tribute to Clint Eastwood and Sergio Leone. It's like a spaghetti. It's if Eastwood would have done The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, and the Douchebag, whatever it happened to be, this would have been the soundtrack of that one. Yeah.
Well, this is a really cool. I'm going to just play it, then we'll start talking about guitars because some interesting things that he's doing in this. So here's Westwood. Now, that's a good example of that type of layering and orchestration. I love that classical guitar.
So yeah, gorgeous.
It's a Yamaha.
Are you playing fingers or, or pick?
Oh, no, I don't play with pick. Only with fingers. Because you can't get that fleshy, tone. You can't get the fleshy dig on it.
But it's got a good tone. It sustains really well.
Yeah, and that's actually going direct. That's not being mic'd. That thing sounds so good. It's an APX-9 Yamaha. And it sounds so good just plugged in, you know, with a compressor and that's it. Just sounds amazing.
They're great. That's a great sounding guitar. Now, it sounded like a 12 string, but it was like two octaves up. Is that electronic?
No, that was two different guitars. You're talking about on the down, da, da, da. Yeah, no, that was a Tektone on the bottom, Yamaha Tektone, and on the top it was a Carvin 7 string that I used for the top because it had the right combination of tones so that it sounded like one guitar.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Because it has a 12-stringy feel, but it's totally
different. Yeah, no, but it has the twang. It just happened to have the twang that I was looking for because it really, you need to twang that stuff. Like Dwayne, you know, you need to twang it, you know. And there was some other things in there. I had a buddy of mine, Ernie Ventry, actually lent me his Spurs. He actually had a pair of Spurs. So at the beginning of that jing, 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 it was jiggling Spurs. It's not like Clint, you know, so you need the clangy, clang, you know, the horse.
The Western tempo. Feel.
So that set the tone.
That came across.
What was very cool, too, is when you were playing the classical guitar part, when you answered, there was like a little, there was two guitars on each side, electric, and then their echo. So,
That was an ES-3. I think it was an ES-335 that I used there.
ES-335?
I'm sorry, 345.
345.
Yeah. So that was,
And I have to put kudos out to Ryan because that's hard. There's a lot going on in there, but the echo's clean. It doesn't get in the way.
No, he was so good about that stuff. I remember on this this actual tune, and we was mixing it for him, he goes, you know, there's so many parts here. He says, it's kind of overwhelming. I remember saying that. But I know. It's not my fault. I only do what I'm told. You know? So, but he really got it to work, you know, because it was just, you know, he's used to not having that dense of something to have to maneuver.
That's not easy to keep all that so you can hear everything.
That's what I'm saying. It was just without him, this would not have been the album that it is.
The only other guy I know that can do that well is Alan Parsons.
And yeah,
I
think he was busy.
He'd have a tough time with that.
Now, that is Alan.
What was the bass? You were playing bass, right?
Yes.
What's that? How did you get that sound? That's a cool sound.
Yeah, that was, a Yamaha Attitude bass, a five-string Attitude bass. And I have that going through an Ampeg preamp into a Neve and into the board or into the
That was it? The growl in it is just pushing the preamp? It's got a weird sound to it.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It's got you want a little bit of aggressive, you know, sound so that, if you isolated just that track, you'd hear it distorting on the top, you know? So,
Let's take a listen of this song, which is, I grew up with this song and, I think it's kind of cool what you did with this 4 and 20.
Okay.
So talk a little bit. Set this up a little bit.
I was always a big Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young fan, especially Steve Stills. One of my favorite songs of all time was Black Queen. Amazing work. It's actually, I kind of stole his vibe for Justified, that I detuned my Martin down to C, open C like that, and I did a lot of that kind of cool stuff that he did on that. But 4 and 20 was on the Deja Vu album, and it's just a singular folk song, you know.
Yep.
And I wanted to, it just occurred to me, it wasn't anything I was thinking about, like, what should I redo? I was listening to it in the car one day, and I heard it, hearing, you know, the actual theme, thinking, this would sound cool with a John Bonham, like a Levy, you know, 4 and 20 years to go. It lent itself to a whole different feel. So I thought, well, let me run this up the flagpole, see what happens. and so I think I even lifted the Bonham beat just as a loop, you know, just that opening part of
step
four, just to see, and then put, I put a bass thing to it, like a filter, nice shot, man, you know, hey, nice shot, man, like, you know, like a dub, like an eighth note. And then started putting this, and I'm like, this has a good feel to it, has a really good feel. And so from that point, I had to make it a little bit long, a little bit longer than the original song, which is only like 2.5 minutes long. So I put a middle part that was just like I was putting down an idea with two different guitar parts, just listening to what I put down before. So that whole middle section is completely improv. I thought, this is working. I'm not going to redo it. And that was the pod. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I'm going to let that lay as it is, you know, and not disturb it, not overthink it. So that's, yeah.
No, it's surprising in the terms of what I originally remember of the song. When I read later, when I was listening to it, I was trying to hear the theme, and yeah. I caught it. But, I mean, it was like, wow, this is totally different.
Also, I tried to really emulate his little things that he does in there. Little, you know, he does a couple of those things that are trademarked for me when I heard that song. I've heard it for so many, you know, years.
Do me a favor. Show us what you're talking about.
Well, let's see. It would be... Let's see. He would go down. I'm trying to think of the part in the song. I could point it out when it does it. I embrace the many colored bees. He also would go flat on a note. He would drop a note every so often. Is she gone? Yeah, I would have to. I can hear it in my head when I can.
All right, let me play it and
point it out.
Keep your guitar with you, and then we can talk a little more.
Yeah,
because I think this is kind of interesting to see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's 4 and 20.
All right.
Brilliant.
A little different than the original. Well, like on the first verse where he says, "Is she gone?" Everything goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just one of the things where the lyrics, I wanted to communicate that. So everything just dies out. For a split second, I wanted it completely zero black digital right before where you actually came in at. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there were certain areas where I tried to make sure that since I was singing the lyrics with the guitar, to make sure that the meaning of those lyrics came across
right.
musically. So there were a few places at the beginning, like verse 1 and 2, where I would do that, or I would copy exactly his little vocal turn.
Yeah, this is at the
improv part all the way out. But I think the stuff that I was referring to is basically at the beginning of that, where I tried to really communicate the meaning of the lyrics, mm-hmm. you know, about this guy who had, you know, this is really, I think, about his father, I believe, his hard life that he had, mm-hmm. you know, so it's I tried to kind of, again, musically put that forth.
Yeah. No, it's interesting what you were saying about Black Queen, because when I had Snuffy on, that was one of his favorites, too.
As well it should be.
And it was interesting because he had those old Martin, pre-war Martins. And,
yeah.
And Stills was a guy I always said he could distort a Martin.
Yes.
And it sounded great.
Well,
he just dig into
dig,
it.
That's the thing is his aggression. And that's what one of the things on this that I was trying to transport that Black Queen energy into mm-hmm. this track. Bam! You know, he hit that thing like Bruce Lee would kick somebody in the side, you know, and you'd let that string would go sharp. It would hit so hard.
Yeah.
And then ring back down into pitch. Yeah. You know, and his the aggressive style that he had of wangling that string.
Yeah, you have just, to check out that Black Queen on his first solo album.
First solo album.
It's unbelievable. It the tone he gets is just to die for.
It is unbelievable. And then him scatting with himself too in there. It's just one of my favorite guitar tracks of all time.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's great. That's a great song.
Yeah.
Now there's another one that you did that was another cover of another song from Godley and Creme, Sailor. I want to play that because that's an interesting one too. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I'm a huge 10cc fan and even bigger Godley and Creme fan. Mm-hmm. I love their boldness and their inventiveness and fearlessness when it came to their solo albums. And this album was off of a triple album set that highlighted the Gizmotron. And it was a tune called Sailor. And it was done very much like the sultry summertime, you know, like Porgy and Bess. And it was just Kevin Godley and that gorgeous, you know, falsetto tenor voice that he has. And it's just basically one guitar and one Gizmotron part, which I recreated with the Ebo on this. And again, I thought it was it's such a sexy song and sultry. So I kind of wanted to pay tribute to Ronnie Montrose and the way that he did Town Without Pity. Mm-hmm. Which made it so sexy and just it swaggered. So I decided, okay, this will be a good track to maybe pay tribute to two people, you know, Godley and Creme as far as composers and Ronnie Montrose as far as, you know, an approach. And so this has a very similar beat to Town Without Pity. And thought that the melody could fit really well over this. So at the beginning of this, it's I have my guitar going through a Leslie, so you can hear it spins around, and it's kind of like the Wish You Were Here kind of vibe at the beginning to put you into a trance, you know, and that first guitar is just direct, no amp, and then when it kicks in, then I go to a Strat.
Oh, okay.
You know, so you hear that, you know, and I'm really digging in with that, and there's, you know, I have some fast Leslie going on, and a vibraphone is at the same time in that opening section. Then I completely transfer it over to a jazz, you know.
That's where the clip starts, is the swing.
Right, and that's with my buddy Jim Gammon, who was one of my lifelong friends, who's on trumpet, who was responsible for a lot of my musical upbringing. And I had him come down and play trumpet on that. And so it's great, you know, and it turned, and again, this was a part that I was going to, I have this bad habit of asking somebody to be on the album, and then when I give them like a sample of what I kind of where I wanted to play, I end up keeping it and going, sorry, I don't need you on here. I screwed Lyle Workman over. I screwed Greg Douglas over. I feel bad about it, but they totally understand. But it's like, you know, and this was another one where Jim was supposed to play a trumpet solo. But I rattled off like, here, like this kind of a feel. And I listened to it and go, damn, this sounds good over the top of this. I don't think I don't need a trumpet, but he played all in and around it and a lot of stuff at the end and all of that, you know, but that is him doubling with me on the guitar. Is it going to a different texture? You
it's know? Interesting hearing the trumpet with the guitar. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So what part we're taking is where he starts the swing lead.
Yeah.
And that's the Strat?
Yeah. No, that's a Tele, actually. Tele. You're talking about the solo section?
Yeah, where you start, it's like a fast swing, and then I'm going to go in a little bit into the slower shot.
Yeah, that was a Tele, and at the end, then that's the Marvel again.
Okay.
At the end when it goes
okay,
back.
Let's go ahead and play this and take a listen. You can see what he's talking about here. Here's Sailor.
Thank you.
she showed up at my doorstep. You know, it's like the muted. Her perfume permeated the office. Yeah, you know, it was real. The film noir.
The muted trumpet just sets the whole atmosphere. I know.
Yeah,
that's just amazing. Vibes, it vibes. And he's only doing a little. It's just enough.
No, and
it's
he vibes that stuff. He channels Miles. This guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's yeah. I've had him on a lot of my soundtrack stuff. We've worked all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, he's an incredible guy.
It's a great feel. I mean, I love that. That swing thing is.
And that's Joe Travers, by the way, on drums, just tearing it up back there. You, mm-hmm. know, you know, doing that swing. Which he can play anything you give him. He's just like, what do you need? Okay.
No, that's great. And then when you that's the Marvel guitar. When you go back to the
Yeah. But then the whole middle section. Again, I just threw it down. That's a one take thing. I just said something like this. And that was just one take going through it, and we go, wow, that sounds pretty damn good. Yeah,
so no, it's a great shuffle. It really works. I'm curious to see if what they both Godly and Krem and Stills, if they respond to it.
I would love to know what their opinion is, even if they think it sucks. That's opinion, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go into because I want to give you enough time to play Arclight, which we'll take out. But I want to talk a little bit about the last two songs, because these, more than others, what I was impressed with most, and I'm not playing, you'll hear that what I'm showing is not as much the lead section, but you do these like ambient guitar things that you're doing in there, which is, to me, more orchestrational in that sense. So the first one I'm going to talk about is, let's take a look at The Long Awakening. You want to kind of set that up?
Well, for years I'd felt guilty because I hadn't written a song for my son, Nate. And, you know, I always wanted to, and everybody I know has written a song for their child, you know. But it finally kind of occurred to me that this one, I wanted to do something about parenthood, where the adventure of starting when he was in the womb, basically, all the way to the point where he says goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the song is. It's The Long Awakening is his awakening as an adult and our awakening as parents. So it starts in the womb, the beginning of it, and there's three notes, boom, 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 which is our family, Joey, myself, and Nathaniel. And so that tri-note motif goes all the way through. Okay. In different incarnations, you'll hear it going all the way through. Mm-hmm. It starts the song and it ends the song.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts in the womb, which is all the kind of floaty ambient stuff, you know, this kind of, you know, serene kind of vibe. But then at one point you hit this big crash and it's his birth. And then all of a sudden you start to hear the tempo pick up. And when it kicks in, that's basically our life together is now a family.
Oh.
And it goes through that. It goes through a darker area, which is his adolescence of, you know, the areas where you're not quite sure who you are and all of that. And then the acoustic section is the maternal, is my wife's influence, you know, over, you know, with him. And then it comes to a point where it stops and there's just solo piano and this is him moving out. And I remember how it was when I moved out. My mother, I remember the look on her face, you know, she was letting me go. But I could see the sadness, you know, and it was like a real bittersweet moment, you know, when I was getting my own place and moving on. And I know what that empty nest, you know, was like now. And so, and then the whole end part is you know, it escalates gently all the way up and gets more complex because that's his life as he gets to be an adult. The more things come in, but there's a solo that goes over the top of it, which is was my feeling of a parent's guiding light over the top of that. So it's kind of like, here's, you know, just to keep in mind what mom said, what dad said, you know, and then at the end, it stops abruptly because it's like, my God, we're done. You know, we're done. It's an empty nest. And so the whole quartet at the end is our memories of all those times.
Yeah.
So
now I think that if I remember correctly, the part I'm playing right now is at the front, but what was interesting, and again, credit to Ryan, is you're doing a lot of stuff with a lot of echoes.
Yeah.
And you can hear it all. Yeah. It's all there and it doesn't get muddy at all. And there's a lot of stuff going on back
there. Yes,
there
is.
But headphones.
Yes. Yes. This one, when you buy the album, this one you really got to sit down and listen to in depth. Because it's just amazing what he's doing on this. So this is called The Long Awakening. And it's right here. Let's take a listen. Thank you. what you're doing in the beginning is just, I love all that. Stunning. Ear candy. That's what I call that.
Well, I started with Nate's heartbeat.
Yeah,
I hear, you hear the pow, pow. Yeah. That was actually his actual heartbeat when, I recorded it when we were at the doctor.
Nice. Wow.
And so that's what sets the tempo. And then you hear him in there when he, after he's born, you hear that birth, or you can hear him in the background. I had him, I always record him, and he's in the back, like he was about maybe two, I think. And it's like your child's voice is like music. So it's another instrument. And so I put him in the back there, you know.
That's interesting. How did he react to it?
Oh, it was funny. I didn't play it for him until it was absolutely finished, you know, and I played it for him. And he sat there and he listened to it, because he's 18 now. You know, he sat there and listened to it, and he goes, he was sarcastic, which was great, exactly what I would expect. He says, couldn't you do anything that was worthwhile? You know, I mean, he says something like that, looked at me like, you know, I'm laughing, and he starts laughing, you know. I think it meant a lot to him, you know, but it meant more to me, because it was dad's sentiment, you know.
Well, so. Of course.
Now, some of the guitars, you're getting really interesting sounds, like the slide guitar is kind of a... It's not a standard, like...
It's a pedal steel.
Oh, it is a pedal steel.
Yeah, it's a pedal steel. I had a Sierra made left-handed for me.
Oh, and so very cool.
I used a pedal steel, which I have no... I don't know how to play a pedal steel at all, which is perfect. Because
I think you do it well.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, how does this thing work? Well, that sounds pretty good. I have no idea how to work the pedals yet. I got to get Skunk to help me seal me with that.
Was there a 12-string in there?
Yeah. It was a 12-string, yeah. It was a Yamaha.
And then the tinkly Echo guitars.
That was my Green Pacifica that I have, that I played with Emerson with. There were so many different guitars going on.
It's amazing, and all the echoes. It's really cool what you're doing.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I mean, I was always such a huge fan of Pink Floyd and Gilmore, you know, and they were so good at laying down environments
that. Ambiance.
Yeah, you know, total. That really give you a feeling.
I mean, each section of that song, you could just take it and go, okay, like, just give me a song of that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to go ahead real quick, because we're almost out of time, and I want to let you play that one song to take us out, Arclight. This is Our Winter Love, and again, there's some really, what I want to mention, it's a nice, very mellow song, but like, you're using the baritone guitar.
Yes.
Yes. So I want everybody to listen to it, because this is very cool. And then we can talk real quickly after the replay. But this is Our Winter Love. Now, that song really demonstrates that whole orchestrational attitude in terms of when things come in and out and how it builds. It builds up with this very simple thing going on, and then these little guys come in and out and all that stuff. I love it. And that that baritone. It's killer.
It's that was
Wichita Lineman.
It was such a it was total Glen Campbell Wichita Lineman. But I mean, it's such a wonderful, soothing. It's like comfort food.
Yeah, it's rich.
You know,
it's
rich. It's just like, oh, you don't hear it enough anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
it's beautiful.
And you have to. I just pulled the front of the clip, but I think this is the one where you have the string section at the end, right?
No, that's
the other one. The other one. Oh, okay.
This does have strings in it, but no.
It's beautiful. I mean, and that's just a tidbit of it. There's much more developed into the song. Yeah. Anyway, we're out of time. Real quick, markboniamusic.com is the website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's going on? What's happening with you?
Well, I'm going to be doing this actually at the beginning of the year at Bogey's, thanks to Miss Reamer over here.
Yeah.
We'll be on the 26th. Sunday, and I've got
January.
Yep, January. We're going to be playing this stuff live, along with some stuff from Doubly Ticket and American Matador, maybe even some Keith Emerson stuff. We'll see.
With an amazing band.
Yeah. I got Thomas Lang on drums. Steve Percaro's going to come in and play some piano. Jonathan Sindelman, Mike Wallace, Travis Davis from Keith's band. So, and there may be some others. We'll see. But so that's happening, and then I'm playing with Edgar Winter as well. That's coming up. And also with Harry Shearer, we're doing the Derek Smalls tour.
Yeah, I got to go to that again. So funny.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
That's I mean, just funny. Playing that stuff is just...
Yeah. It has to be a blast.
Jeff, you should come. It's really great. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I want to...
Next month.
What day? That's on Sunday on the 26th. I got to figure out when NAMM is happening. It depends on NAMM.
I think it's the weekend after NAMM.
Yeah.
If it's a weekend after NAMM,
I don't book shows on NAMM weekend.
Yeah, it's a crazy.
That'd be silly.
Yeah,
but that I want to see how you do this live.
Yeah, right? Well, I've been working on it. Condensing all these parts to the essential parts, but it's fun. It's good. This isn't easy stuff to perform. It's a little a little complex.
So,
but
great. I'm glad this is a great album. I can't say enough about it. I recommend everybody get this. It's really cool. There's so much stuff. We just scratched the surface on what's going on in the album, but there's a lot of things happening. So I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
I'm going to take us out with the clip Arc Like, what I'll have you play.
Okay.
And you want to kind of set it up real quick?
Well, this was a tune that I had written with Gary Hull, who was a great friend of mine that I roomed with back in the day, and he had actually written some of this stuff. And I found it on a tape cassette. And so I found him, tracked him down, says, hey, can I do this on the album? And I'm going to write, stuff around it. And he says, yeah, absolutely. So this is kind of was a group, a co-write for this.
Okay.
So.
And again, thank you, Lori, for putting this together. Anything you need to announce while you're...
We already announced Mark's show, but also at Bogey's on October 17th, we have the Delgado Brothers.
Ah, yes. They've been on the show. They're great, great players.
We love them.
And... okay. Thanks again so much. It's always good to see Laura. I don't get to see her enough.
I know.
And it's great to have you back on the show. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So everybody have a great week. Check this out. This album's available everywhere. You've got to get this thing. It's great. And this is Arc Light. Have a good night, everybody.